is going on with my screen? Good morning. Oh, hold on. Okay. Hello. Oh. Hi. Sorry, I had to be in my car this morning.
You're brave.
Well, I have really good Wi-Fi right here.
Good. I'm gonna turn my light on.
There is Miss Cheryl.
Hello, Cheryl Fraser.
Hello, Jack Canfield. How are you this morning?
I'm good, thank you.
Good.
Thank you for doing this.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I had a spirited conversation with your two lovely ladies, Patty and Jocelyn, this morning, and we're looking forward to it.
Good, good. I'm so incredibly well supported. That's what I'm trying to get at.
I'm looking for Patty. I was trying to admit her before I let everyone else in.
Where do you live, Cheryl?
I am blessed to live on beautiful Vancouver Island. So I'm looking out the window at the ocean.
Oh, good for you. Yeah, I live in Santa Barbara. It's equally nice.
Yeah, your whales and our whales, the same whales, just different times of year.
It's true. There's Patty.
Hi.
Hi, Patty.
I have a problem getting in.
Well, you're here now.
I'm never accepted.
You have fabulous hair compared to 45 minutes ago, sister.
This is what I can do in a half an hour. Okay, so who wants to read Cheryl's bio? Do you want me to do it, or Jack, do you want to do it?
Why don't you do it, because you already talked to her this morning. You can add a little personalization if you want. I think it makes more sense.
Okay, I just have to pull it up because I'm not looking at it right now. Hold on 1 second. All right, so one question I have is, it's not in the document, Jocelyn. Is it a separate doc?
Yeah, it was here, I can resend it.
Hold on. 10 o'clock, Jocelyn.
Yeah, I know. I'll resend it as I'm letting everyone in.
Okay.
Morning, everybody. We're just letting a few more people into the seminar from the waiting room. People coming in, we'll wait a minute or two just for allowing those people who live in a different reality to get here on time.
Good morning, everyone.
Jocelyn's in her car. Where's your car parked, Jocelyn? I'm curious.
I am at a coffee shop in Montana, my favorite place in the world.
Montana or the coffee shop?
Montana.
Very good.
I love it here.
So welcome, everybody. We're just a few minutes away from starting. Thanks for joining us again. Have a wonderful seminar for you today with an incredible speaker. Looking forward to it. And in just about a minute, I'll let Patty introduce her.
I could just find her bio. I could do that. I'm really embarrassed. Jocelyn's not coming through.
It's came on my end.
You sent it from Club?
Yep.
Okay. Here we go.
Got it.
All right. I'm here. I think, yes. All right.
I can just share in the meantime how excited I am because I first heard Dr. Cheryl on Tony Robbins' podcast, and she was selected as his main relationship expert this year when he did his three-part series. So I'll share that in the meantime.
That's fine. I'm ready. Okay. I'm excited too, Jack. We had a great call this morning just to make sure that we covered everything. And I'd just like to welcome everybody to the call today. And we're talking about relationships, which is always interesting. And we have Cheryl Fraser, PhD. She's a Buddhist psychologist and sought after relationship expert. She's helped thousands of couples jumpstart their love life and create passion that lasts a lifetime. She's a highly successful and awarded Fulbright scholar. She has conducted extensive research on sexual behavior and what causes love relationships to succeed or fail. With her groundwork, she created the Become Passion online workshop for couples, which we'll talk about later today. And she has a thriving practice in sex and couples therapy. As a former talk show radio host, Cheryl's a dynamic guest expert for television and radio, appearing on multiple programs, including The Expert, CBC Marketplace, Air America, The Loving Well Podcast, and many more. As a columnist for Mindful and Best Health magazines, Cheryl explores love, sex, relationships, and the human experience. Her approach to life and to helping others is based in her practice of meditation and Buddhism, which we all need in a relationship, which she has studied for 25 years in both Tibetan and Theravadin traditions. I don't know what that is, but Jack knows, I'm sure, and Cheryl will explain it. She was given permission to teach by her root teacher, Nagmal Rinpoche, and she is resident meditation teacher for Island Dharma. Her work is encapsulated in teaching of mindful loving, which we could all use, I'm sure, where she brings the Buddha's teaching into the bedroom. So when Cheryl's not in India, or right now, she's on Vancouver Island, BC, because we are all sort of landlocked. So with that, I want to really welcome you, Cheryl. Thank you so much. And also, she has a book out, so write this down, everyone. It's called Buddha's Bedroom, The Mindful Loving Path to Sexual Passion and Lifelong Intimacy. And people say it's your guide to transcendent sex, just so you know. So Cheryl, thank you for being here. It was great to talk to you this morning, and we're really excited to have you. This is going to be an awesome, awesome call. I know that how we sort of do anything is how we do everything. And you know that we've been talking about responsibility and vision and goals and all the different areas in our wheel of life, which you've also explored and looked at. And I know you've been in the community, you've asked a lot of questions, and people have a lot of questions. So I'm just going to let you get started. Just want to say welcome.
Well, thank you, Patty. Thank you, Jack. And thank you to Jocelyn, who kind of is the behind the scenes getting us all together. I'm watching the chat box here, folks, and it's astounding to me. We've got people from India, Europe. I know this isn't a surprise to Patty or Jack, but I didn't realize the breadth of the internationality. So when we think about relationships, how do we relate from continent to continent, as well as how do I relate in this moment with you? And I. So I'm Cheryl. I'm going to be keeping an eye on the chat box. Please, if you have questions as we go this morning, in the first part, where I'm going to be giving some information, teaching, inviting you to participate in some exercises, please put your questions in the chat box. I'll ask Jocelyn to also keep an eye on those, because we'll have, I suspect, a pretty animated Q&A at the end today, which all of you are very good at. But I'd like to start by bringing it internal. And I'm going to invite each of you, unless you're actively driving a vehicle right now, to actually close your eyes and take you through a little visualization just to set us up for the depth of why today's topic, in my biased view, is arguably the most important topic we can cover. So I want you to settle in, closing your eyes and just spending a breath or three, imagining breathing into your heart on the inhale. Jack showed that beautiful heart math process. You can use that one, or simply just imagine breathing into your chest, your heart center, on the inhale in your own rhythm, and breathing out from the heart on the out breath. I invite each of us to place a palm on our heart center while we're simply breathing in and out from that area. And to create a bit of pressure between the palm and the chest wall, actually pushing in a bit, creating contact, invigorating that area energetically and physiologically. Simply breathing in to the heart and out from the heart. As best you're able, inviting the mind to let go of the busyness of this morning, this afternoon, or this evening, depending on time zone. And inviting the mind and heart to make a connection with each other, to show up as best you're able in this moment, right now. You can leave your hand on your heart center or settle your hands on your knees or your lap as you wish. Ideally, keeping your eyes closed, if that's a comfort level for you. And I want you to imagine that right now, we're in a world without pandemic, without COVID, and all of us are in a giant, beautifully appointed room with Jack and with Patty, where they're leading us live. Imagine being in your chair in that audience with these beautiful beings, some strangers, some friends from this group around you. I invite you to place or imagine a touch of a smile on your lips. And perhaps I'm even there in the wings, about to come out and share some relationship teaching with you. And maybe now I walk out, I suspect Jack, Patty, and I embrace, hug each other, welcome each other. And then I turn to you and you're in your chair, surrounded by this beautiful community. And I invite you to bend down and look under your chair. And what you find is a small, beautiful, golden box. And we invite you to take that box, place it in your lap, not opening it yet. And then we invite you to lift up the lid of the box. And when you look inside, you see 7 balls. Whatever colors arise for you, they all may be one color, multiple colors, the color of the inclusivity rainbow. Trust your instinct. There's no right, no wrong. If you don't see anything, many of us don't visualize very strongly, imagine. Imagine what the balls look like. And then as you take a closer look, you notice that 2 of the balls are made of a different material. 5 of the balls, as you move your hands over them, are rubber, springy, strong and versatile. 2 of the balls are made of crystal. And as you move your hands over those 2 balls, they're cool. You can sense their strength, but also their fragility. And I invite you now to imagine picking up one of the crystal balls and holding it in your palm. And you gently start to toss it in the air and catch it. Toss it in the air and catch it. Touch of a smile on your face, accessing the heart. And then you pick up one of the rubber balls in your other hand, and you, with some concentration probably, you're tossing a crystal ball in one hand, a rubber ball in the other. And then we fast forward and we invite you to pick up 3 balls and attempt to juggle them. Perhaps some of us can. We're juggling the crystal ball in one hand, the 2 rubber balls in the other. And then we invite you to take 3, 4, 5. You know what's next. You've got 7 balls. You're attempting to toss and catch and toss and catch. You're dropping some. The rubber balls bounce and bounce. You laugh. Your seatmate grabs that dropped ball, gives it back to you. You throw it back up in the air, and then you drop one of the crystal balls. What happens? Not a trick question. It shatters. When you try to pick that ball up, when your seatmate tries to assist you, it's in pieces. You're not sure how you can put that one back together again. And then gradually allow that little visualization experience to melt away, staying with your direct experience right now in your chair. To offer to you, you've been studying and training at the seats of the master and mistress of growth, the wheel of life. And I want you to decide for yourself, if there's truth in what I'm about to offer, that 5 of the 7 qualities in our wheel of life are like rubber balls. Financial, work and career, recreation and free time, personal development, community, and contribution. If we drop those balls, they can recover. They bounce. They're not permanently harmed. We all know this. We've maybe let go of personal development at times due to busy life. We've returned to it. It waits for us. It's intact. You know where I'm leading, I'm pretty sure, at this point. I want you to contemplate for yourself. Don't take my word for anything. Apply it to your own direct life experience. When we drop the relationships ball, when we drop the health and fitness ball, do they not potentially shatter? As we move forward in this class today, focusing on relationships, as you move forward through the rest of this fantastic coaching program, this community, I'm inviting you to really get serious and playful and dedicated and focused on the fact that if we drop the relationship ball, if we drop the health and wellness ball, the other balls cease to matter. I cannot tell you the amount of world-changing leaders I've had the privilege to talk to about their relationships who've said when their business is going great, finances are cooking, they're giving, they're growing, but their personal relationship is non-existent in terms of a romantic sexual one, or it's struggling, they're miserable. And how many people, particularly during difficult times like now, might lose so much, the finances, even the community and contribution may be hit, but if their romantic or deep relationships are strong, they are well. If our health is well, we are well. And I invite you just to take two breaths, your own pace, into and out from your heart. Taking precious care of our crystal balls. And then open your eyes. Thank you. Thank you. It's a teaching for me too. I suspect I'm not the only one here who at times get immersed in my career, in my teaching, in the people I serve. And if I can be completely blunt, and I suspect I can, I freaking drop my own relationship ball, right? I'm a relationship expert. Do I do it perfectly? Jack, Patty, are you perfect all the time? We all know. Yeah, no honesty here. All right. So what I want to talk to you about today are a number of things, and I want to address some of your questions, but I want to start by, because I'm going to ask you if you're willing to be vulnerable, to share some of your own relationship trials and tribulations. I want to start off by sharing a few of mine so you know we're all in this together. Off the top though, I'm going to probably use a lot of language today about romantic sexual relationship, but I want to also invite all of us that are single, currently not in a romantic sexual relationship, to apply what I'm talking about in two ways. One can be to a previous relationship that you've got some learning still left on the table there, and also the aspiration for the future relationship. And those of us choosing to not pursue romantic sexual relationship at this time, we can certainly apply this to relationship with yourself, as I was chatting with many of you about in the chat box, and also with friends, family, colleagues, except for the naked part, the sex part. Probably you don't want to be applying that to friends and colleagues. So just, you know, a rather honest and humorous shout out there. The other thing is the language is meant to be inclusive, heterosexual, LGBTQ, all couples, all two people, or for that matter, if you're in a consensual non-monogamous relationship with three persons, all of this teaching applies to all couples. Love is love. Connection is connection. Okay. The first love of my life was Sean Cassidy. Sean Cassidy was absolutely for sure my soulmate, and any women or men on this call who thought he was yours, Patty, he mine, girlfriend.
I had the lunchbox.
Oh, she's kicking it up a notch. I did not have the lunchbox, but I had erotic fantasies about that Hardy boy, Ron. I wrote, thank goodness there was no social media back then, because I wrote these erotic, really, I mean, teenage girl sexuality. I was a virgin. I was choosing not to be sexual. I was young, but oh, the passion. He was going to come to Vancouver Island, sweep me out of my little life, and take me to Beverly Hills to live what? Happily ever after. Spoiler alert, didn't happen. happen. And my first love and my next love and my first husband weren't my soulmate either. So the first teaching I want to give us off the top is kill the soulmate and save your relationship. What do I mean by that? when we fall into this idea that happiness, grace, and being filled up comes from outside, if we only find the perfect person, get the perfect waistline, find the perfect job, create the perfect amount of money. I know you know this, but I want to emphasize and repeat what you already know. Happiness comes from within. The basis of what I teach, much like your two wonderful leaders here, is that we ourselves are fully responsible for our life, for what we create, and what we do. Now, this is tricky when we talk about romantic sexual relationship or other relationship, isn't it? Because when I'm unhappy, it's your fault. We do tend to default that way, even if we don't ascribe to that as a truth. Let me give you a little example from this morning. So this morning I woke up, I'm on Pacific time, so I was meeting with you 10 a.m. my time, and I got up and I had a plan. Ever get up and have a plan and things don't quite go the way you think? And my husband had to go get a blood test this morning. He was out of the house and I got up taking care of business. And I had a shower. I finished it with a cold shower blast because I've been doing that for a few months myself. Fun, not fun, but really useful, right? And I got out and I, you know, got dressed and I just felt, okay, I'm getting prepared, giving myself time to serve, to deliver the best way I can. And I came out a little bit sleepy still to go make my lemon water. And I stepped in something. It did not feel pleasant on the old bare foot. And I looked down and, as is often the case in my home, it was a bunch of rat guts and a rat tail. Yeah, we've got a cat and he's a hunter. And my immediate thought was, darn it, I'm gonna call him John, my hubby. Darn it, John, it's your job in the morning to look for dead animals and pick them up. It is his job. If we have certain, you know, I pick up the dog food, he picks up the rat entrails. And I caught the thought and I thought, isn't that just freaking perfect, right? It's his fault that I've got rat guts on my foot. I know I live a glamorous life. It's very glamorous for all of us here. What is the take-home message there? Catch your thought, change your thought, watch out for the almost automatic response a lot of us have to blame the other. I'm going to give you a mini teaching right now. First, I'm going to ask in the chat box, have any of you ever had something happen and right away it's blame the partner? Right away it's, ah, she said she was going to pick up milk. Right away it's, oh, he's supposed to pick up dead rat guts. Anybody relate? Yes, 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 yes. Oh yeah, are you kidding? I'm going to give you a little exercise right off the top around that. This is an adaptation. It's taught a lot of different ways, but I'm going to give a shout out to the wonderful relationship leader, John Gottman, does beautiful work. And I'm going to use mostly his phrasing for this one. When we have a problem with our sweetheart, my honey was getting home pretty soon and I was about ready to say, for goodness sakes, you're supposed to look for the rat guts. I've got an important thing this morning and rat guts on the prayer rug. Come on now. Instead, the language John Gottman uses is soften startup. I talk about, you know, how to start a conversation without pissing your partner off. And here's a really simple formula. I want you to jot this down if you can, otherwise we'll make sure we give it to you. And it's, I feel X about Y, and I need Z. Repeat that. I feel X about Y, and I need Z. This right off the top, I want to put this in your wheelhouse as something to start cultivating. Of course, what would that sound like, Cheryl? It would sound something like this. I actually practiced it when my dear sweetheart got home. I said, honey, I feel frustrated and annoyed. I feel X about Y. I feel frustrated and annoyed about stepping on rat guts when I believe we have a deal for you to pick them up. And I need Z. Honey, I feel frustrated and annoyed when I step on rat guts because I believe it's your job to pick them up. And I need you to scan the carpet more carefully before you leave in the morning, right? Now we had a good old laugh and celebrated that our cat was doing well because he almost died a few months ago. So catching rats means he's doing really well. I feel X about Y and I need Z. I just want you to get that. We can practice it later, but it is a really beautiful way to demystify the beginning of a conversation with your spouse, with a business partner, with a friend, you know. So I just want to put that out there. Okay. So don't drop the relationship ball. This is one of my things I want to give from the heart, receive from you is, let's all right now think about that. In your own current romantic relationship or a past romantic relationship or one you hope to manifest in the future, but for this little thought experiment, probably one you're in or used to be in, I want you to think right now, When you first fell in love, anybody here remember how fantastic it is to feel in love? Put that in the chat box. What did you love the most about falling in love? What's one thing you love the most? A lot of us, it was the excitement. It was how easy things felt. It was not having to work hard to want to see them. We planned our lives around seeing that person. Oh, we've got feeling a team, handsome, the excitement, the heart expansion, surprised by the unexpected, anticipated of excitement. You guys are fantastic. They're going by so fast, I can't even catch them all. Yeah, Canadian pronunciation, eh? Yeah, you caught that one. You bet. How amazing and interesting I felt, euphoric. Okay, let's call that, for the sake of this little moment, a 10 out of 10 feeling. We felt 10 out of 10 excited. And were you bringing your A game to the beginning of your current relationship or the one you're thinking about before? How many of us were bringing our A game? 9 or 10 out of 10? Put your number in the chat box. When I was dating my hubby about 6-ish years ago, we met, my current hubby. Current always sounds like there might be a future one. Bad language, Cheryl. The hubby I am with, and the intention is till death do us part at this point, I was bringing a 10 out of 10. I was my most fabulous self. I was a lot more patient. If I had stepped on rat guts when we were dating, I would have found it funny and not blamed him for it, right? You hear that. 9, 10, 10, 10 out of 10. I was bringing an 8 because it was new and then it ended in 6 weeks. Fair enough. I wonder what would have happened if you'd brought a 10. It might still have ended, but then you would know you'd given everything and you could walk away with a big old smile on your face for full commitment. Rat guts, I love that. It's so real. My life's pretty real. I did wash my foot, by the way. We're all good. Okay. Now I want you to think about your current relationship, if you're in one, and here I'm speaking romantic sexual relationship, or I want you to think maybe about your last important romantic sexual relationship. Where are you now in your current relationship, or where were you toward the end of the last one if you're currently single, on a 0 to 10 scale? Are you a 10? Are you bringing a 10? Do you feel like your relationship between the two of you is a realistic 10? All relationships have bumps, issues. I'm not looking for perfection. That's the mythical soulmate, Sean Cassidy. He doesn't exist. What there is a beautifully, imperfectly perfect person, or many different persons we can create relationship with. I was a 3 and I ended at 6. 6 to 7. Margo, well done. She's at an 8 currently, as is Peggy. That's fantastic. I don't hear many 8s when I ask this question. We've got not a 10. I'm at a 2, 7, 6, and so on. And you see in the chat box there, and thank you for your honesty, because we can't change if we don't figure out where we're at right now. And I'm now going to share something that I heard Tony Robbins say first, which is, Tony, I'm gonna channel my inner Tony. Would you date a 6? It's a really good question. Would we date a 6? Well, maybe we'd go on a date or two with a 6. Would you continue developing the depth and breadth of relationship with a 6? And I think for most of it's no. Here's the really important question for the work you're also bravely involved in right now. Even if your partner is being a 2 or a 3, or were if you're working with a previous relationship right now for this thought experiment, could you not be a 10? Could you not bring the breadth and depth of who you are to a relationship, take full, complete responsibility for the whole relationship yourself? Could you not choose to bring a 10 no matter what? That is a really interesting place to play in terms of how we choose to be in the world and what we choose to bring to our relationships. I would not date a 6, not worth my time. Depends, but generally we're at a 6. 7 and 8 and getting better, go Gwen. I'm invested in how I show up. Thank you, Gwen. That's exactly the crystal teaching of this moment, which is, how do I show up? Who can I be to be in relationships so often? And we know I'm absolutely guilty. We sit back and think, why can't he, she be different? Why can't they be more romantic? We hang around, we wait for things to change. How's that working for you? It doesn't work very well for me. What if, what when we choose to bring to the relationship what we think they should be bringing to us? I get thinking sometimes that giving a 10 is too much work to something, someone I don't really know or love. Fair enough. So you can go deeper within and look at that. What would it be to bring a 10? And it's metaphorical, but it's also aspirational to be a 10 as much as we can, as often as we can, in love, in relationship, in our business meeting, in what we bring, of course, to our children, to this moment. So that's just an overview I wanted to share with you. And I want to thank you already so much for your participation and your support of each other. Because as you know, what you put in the chat box are somebody who needed to hear that, needed to be reassured about their sameness and that they're not uniquely broken or uniquely not able to manifest in this way. Okay, so to review real quick, there is no soulmate. I'm sorry, don't shoot the messenger. We all know it. You've all been madly in love. Note the word madly, which is a good one. Biochemical research shows that when we're falling in love, our biochemistry, our neurology mimics the biochemistry of obsessive compulsive disorder for a period of time. That's why you literally couldn't stop thinking about them. It's an incredible high. I can see a lot of you here. I've got you on gallery view. Put up your hand if you loved the high of falling in love. I want to see your hand if you loved the high of falling in love. Absolutely. It's a biochemical bath of endorphins, of oxytocin, norepinephrine, dopamine. Dopamine's the one you get when you do cocaine. It really is a true physiological madly in love, and it's beautiful. I am not going to knock falling in love. I love it. I've done many, many times. But what I want to teach is how do you keep falling in love over and over with the one you're already with. So I'm going to teach you a structure right now. We can put this up in the Facebook group or whatever. Don't worry if you don't catch all of it. I'd rather you be present, open-hearted, and engaging the way you are in the chat box. Okay. I teach teachable skills the way Jack and Patty do. I think a lot of us are in knowledge and information overload, but not necessarily wisdom and action, where we need the teachable skills, the concrete things we can do, we can take actions on, aspire to, set goals around the way you're so beautifully rehearsing and embracing in this program. So I teach couples the following, the three keys to passion, the three keys to an exceptional relationship. And yes, this languaging is tilted towards romantic sexual relationships, but all of it, but the third key, the getting naked key, will apply, as I said, off the top to your other relationships as well. What are the three keys? I'm going to give you a quick teaching on each of them, and then some examples of couples that were strong in some and weak in the others, which is typical for almost all of us, except maybe in the first 3 to 6 months of our new relationship. How many of you took the passion quiz? If so, put that in the chat box. Anybody who didn't, you'd be welcome to do that. Or you rate your current, or you can do it for a past relationship on these three keys. Great. And if you're willing, those of you that took it, put up, what did you score highest in? The three keys, I know, I'm teasing. I haven't said them yet. The three keys are intimacy, thrill, and sensuality. Intimacy, thrill, and sensuality. What do I mean by those words? They're just words. Let's contextualize them. Now, this is drawn not just from my butt, to be perfectly rude. It's drawn from couples and sexuality research over decades and decades. And I've attempted to put it in a way that I think is accessible, I hope, to each of us. The three keys to passion. Yes, a lot of intimacy. Oh, Kathy, that's a pretty good balance there, actually. Intimacy, sensuality, thrill. A lot of you were saying in the chat box, super high in intimacy, low in the other two. I know, I haven't explained them yet. Here we go. I do not use the word intimacy as a euphemism for sex, the way it's often used. You know, we were intimate yesterday. That's a beautiful languaging, but here's what I mean by intimacy. I mean the friendship, the communication, the conflict resolution, the feeling known and knowing your partner, that you inhabit each other's inner world. You have a really good sense of who your sweetheart is. They're the first person you want to call when you get good news, and they're the first person you want to reach out to when something troubling or bad happens. That's what I mean by intimacy. What some other experts call marital friendship. Beautiful. That sense of I've got your back, sweetheart. You've got mine. You know what's bothering me at work these days for the most part. You know what I'm excited about to do this fall. You know me. I feel known. So intimacy is often really strong in longer term couples. And the other two we're about to get to are often pretty weak. So I'll quickly describe thrill and sensuality. Then I'm going to go back and give you examples of some couples who are strong and weak in the different areas to hopefully ground this in your own experience. Meanwhile, a reminder, I'm going to stay for as long as we've got questions at the end here. If you've got your own questions about your specific relationships, please put them in the chat box. If it's too intimate of a question, Jocelyn and I will find a way for you to send it to me privately as well. And I can maybe respond privately tomorrow or something. Happy to help. Intimacy, connectedness, known, communication, conflict resolution, all these great skills that apply to all our other relationships as well. Then we've got thrill. What do I mean by thrill? Well, we've all just nailed that a little earlier here, that falling in love feeling, the butterflies, the excitement, what you all put up when I asked you, do you remember falling in love? What did you love the most? The OCD, obsessive thinking about your partner, being aware of them, thinking what they liked, maybe picking up a surprise for them, leaving love notes, that beautiful stuff. When's the last time you left your sweetheart a love note? Or a love text or a love email? I hope for all of us, we can at least remember when that was. And here's a challenge for today. Here's a challenge for today. I want you today to send a love note to your beloved. If you're not currently in romantic relationships, send a love note to a friend, your daughter, your mom, your cousin, your buddy. Just saying, I'm thinking of you. You matter to me. Thank you for being in my life. Whatever fits for you. That's intimacy. That's thrill. Thrill is that thinking about them, and it's so easy to send them love notes because it's top of mind, top of heart, and if we can be perfectly frank, top of genitals as well. We're really excited when we're in that state of thrill, sexual thrill, a spontaneous passion. I'm going to talk a little bit about the myth of spontaneous passion in long-term relationships a little bit later here today. So to review intimacy, the more friendship, connection, communication, we can call it, you know, the basis. In the triangle, it's the base because you need a base of intimacy. Then we've got thrill, excitement, the stuff I was just talking about. Then we've got sensuality. Sensuality, and I choose that word very deliberately instead of the word sexuality because I want to expand our definition of the sensual well beyond what we might do and what I often say, and I'm going to use a bit of a strong and appropriately explicit language. So I apologize if for anybody that's a little jarring. It's intended to be real. A lot of what I like to call the North American sex life, I'm sure it applies elsewhere, but my expertise is generally the couples I've worked with are North American. Our typical sexual life, if we're having any sex at all in a long-term relationship, is what I like to call nipple, nipple, crotch, goodnight. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a routine. We've got it down. It usually works. You orgasm, I get orgasm, and then, and you know, we like it and it's fine, but where is the sensuality? Again, I want you to think back to earlier in a current or a past relationship, even longer. How about thinking back for a lot of us to our teenage years and think of a first partner. And before you were sexual, I can think back, his name was Eric. I've got his permission to say that. And he was my first love when I was, well, second, Sean was first, but my first human form love was Eric when I was about 16. And we were together for 7 years. It was a tremendous love affair. And he was eventually the person I chose to become sexual with. But he was 5 years older than me. So when we were first dating, I decided I wanted to wait in terms of being fully sexual. We would make out for hours. My parents had this real ugly 1970s couch in the rec room. It was black and red velour or something, hideous. Anyway, but I have a lot of erotic associations to that particular color combination because Eric and I would lay on that couch and we would neck. Why did we call it necking back then? People in my age group, I still don't know, but we would French kiss and all of our erotic focus. Note that focus. Where's your mind? Where's your mindfulness? The mindful, loving piece Patty alluded to in the introduction today. I and he were so profoundly erotically focused on the sensuality of kissing, basically making out from sort of the collarbones up. It was some of the most focused eroticism I've ever had in my entire life. Do any of you remember? Do any of you remember the amount? Put your hand up if you do, or put it in the chat box. Oh, Terry, mwah. I think we were corresponding yesterday in the Facebook group, and we've got L. Turner. We've got several of you that remember. What's the teaching point here? Is this just a story about a red couch and kissing my boyfriend? No. Sensuality is the entire spectrum of sensuality, from looking across the room at a boring party at your sweetheart and a little smile and a connection that means we're going to go now, hun, to holding hands, to when we drive, I almost always have my hand on my partner's back of his neck or his knee or vice versa, connecting, holding hands, kissing, the entire spectrum of sensuality, right to the most raw, taboo, gorgeous, wild, unleashing your inner dark passion, sex, love making, positions, Kama Sutra, and everything in between. being, hence the word sensuality. Let's not limit our focus on what the sensual, sexual, erotic part of our life with our partner means to nipple, nipple, crotch, good night. That's a pretty underachieving place to focus. And I'm going to just share a few more things here that I think will be helpful to some of you about sex, about orgasm, and about connecting. Do you know the typical male orgasm lasts 7 seconds? The typical female orgasm, however, lasts a rollicking 21 seconds. So go women, go women. But those are pretty short bursts of joy. If we're focusing our sexuality on the importance of orgasm, what are we missing out along the way? And actually, Jocelyn, I know your Wi-Fi is not great. So with your permission, I'll quickly tell that story you told me this morning about the young fellow reading my book. Is that okay? So we were talking this morning and Jocelyn had ordered my book and it was on her dining room table and her son and his friends were around and she came in and her son was reading my book, which is actually awesome. It'd be a great book for teens to read. And he said to Jocelyn, he said, Jocelyn, so do you lick people's knees? She's like, what the heck? And he was reading a bit of teaching on what I'm saying right now, because the way I often put it is, when is the last time you licked the back of your partner's knees? When is the last time you licked the back of your partner's knees? Now, fair enough, some of us never may have, but what am I pointing to there? In the spectrum of sensuality, when we're first with a new partner or feeling comfortable with a new partner, we often explore their body. We often explore the erotic, be that positions, be that licking the back of their knees, tickling them with our fingernails, eating strawberries in bed. That may sound cliche, which is really unfortunate. Because when's the last time you fed your sweetheart chocolate dipped strawberries in bed? That's a really nice way to remember to be more broadly sensual. So quick review here. The three keys to passion: intimacy, friendship, communication, conflict resolution, thrill. This is the most elusive one in long-term relationship. I'll try to give you some ideas on how to re-spark thrill today and our entire erotic sensual life, of which arguably having sex, if we limit that language to meaning having some sort of physical contact with each other where at least one of us comes or has an orgasm, is a very limited spectrum of the definition. And I want to encourage you to open that up today. By the way, if you're not currently in a relationship or choose not to be in the future, of course, everything I talk about in the sensuality spectrum, I want you to apply to your solo sensual life, your masturbation life, your erotic life. And the sensual doesn't just mean sex and clitorises and penises and orgasms and all that delightful stuff. It also means, when's the last time you put on something that you felt good in and danced? When's the last time you played, I don't know, salsa music and just moved your hips, or even took an exercise class that got you in movement? How can we unleash some of our natural sensuality? How many of you here have children? Again, I can see a whole lot of you. So you just put your hands up. Have you ever watched a two-year-old when music comes on? Right? What's the natural response? It's to move. It's to explode with joy. It's to be sensual, enjoying body movement, heart, and flow. So I want to remind all of us, don't microanalyze your sensuality life to be just about having sex now and then. Okay, I have a lot more to say about sexuality, but I think we'll leave it and come back to those are the three keys to passion. And I promise to give you a few case examples or ideas of how these play out for different couples. Okay, one of the things I see the most, and a lot of you that were sharing some of your passion quiz scores, if you're wondering what the heck that is, it's just a simple little quiz you can take if you wish, no problem if you don't wish to, where you rate yourself on strong and weak in these three areas. And what a lot, the majority of findings in longer term couples, by that I basically mean a year or longer together, is high intimacy and very low thrill and medium to low or non-existent sensuality. I call that marriage incorporated. What does that mean? Marriage incorporated. That's where, as I say, as a couple, we may be running our relationship. And by the way, married, common law, I don't care. It's just a word. But the person we love and are chosen to be committed to at this time, marriage incorporated or relationship incorporated, is we're running it like a business. The kids are getting to school on time when there was school. They're getting homeschooled more or less adequately. You know, the bills are getting paid. The dog got taken to the vet for the teeth cleaning. You and I are like ships passing in the night, high-fiving. Well, I take son somewhere and you take daughter somewhere, and we're all getting enough vegetables. We're doing really well running the business of our relationship. But what gets lost, if we're not careful, what gets lost is the relationship couple part of our relationship. We're friends, not lovers, even if we're having sex some of the time, and I hope we are. We are parents, not a couple. We are friends instead of also being friends with benefits, so to speak, this thrill and sensuality part. So I want to reassure everybody who recognizes themselves in marriage incorporated or in a past relationship. And I encourage those of you who want relationship in the future to be aware that these are teachable skills, and you can change the trajectory if you're willing to take effort, if you're willing to make intention. And those of us in a relationship, I said I'd be vulnerable. I have to be really careful not to fall into marriage incorporated in my own relationship. And it's 6 years old. We're reasonably new, but like almost all of you, I work a lot to do a lot of things and enjoy being in the world in a really rich way. And if I'm not careful, I forget about the perfectly imperfect person sleeping beside me. I neglect my sexual life as well. In fact, I was teaching last year to 600 couples at actually a Tony program, Ultimate Love and Relationship. And these were people who were at the top of their game in everything else. And they were there to look at their romantic couple's relationship. And I was there with another sexuality expert. And the two of us were co-teaching a workshop every day to a segment of this room. And she and I didn't know each other. We met there, we dove in and co-created this thing, but we didn't know each other's history or story at all yet. And we were on stage teaching, and we both almost at the same time said, well, we schedule sex. And then we burst out laughing and high-fived each other and said, you do too, I do too. And the audience was sort of slack-jawed. What do you mean you schedule sex? These two sexual experts up on the stage who everybody assumes and projects inaccurately that we have ideal, amazing sexual lives. We could write the Kama Sutra on steroids. No. What do we mean by scheduling sex? Here's a take-home message to anyone in a romantic sexual relationship. And if you're solo and you're not cultivating an erotic life through a solo sexual life, I challenge you to take this same advice. The majority of couples, long-term couples, this is research by Rosemary Basson at the University of British Columbia. She is a sexuality and sexual desire expert. Her research shows that the majority of long-term couples start making love from a place of what's called sexual neutrality. Well, Cheryl, what the heck does that mean? Sexual neutrality means neither you or I are at all turned on. Neither you or I are in the mood. Neither you or I feel horny. The majority of long-term couples start making love from a place of sexual neutrality. Again, what does that mean? I wanted to bring this teaching to you today a little later, but I'm going to bring it right now. I mentioned earlier the myth of spontaneous desire, okay? Back to falling in love, all that thrill and biochemistry and lust happening. We had spontaneous desire or horniness or lust fairly often in the beginning. Not all of us. All of us are wired differently. Some of us have abuse histories, sexual dysfunction issues. We can talk about those as well, or I can talk offline if that's too private of a thing to talk about here today. I want to acknowledge that. I'm not assuming we're all sexually intact, orgasmic, or even wired and wishing to be sexual. Please deep bows to the breadth and depth of sexual trauma and backgrounds and differences for each of us. But for those of us in a relationship at any time who've had sexual lust, spontaneous desire, what tends to happen over time? A few months, a few years. Oh man, I don't want to jump your bones the way I used to. I don't have that wash of kind of groin-based or heart-based. Rawr, you know, I want you, you're so yummy. Let me tear your clothes off. I love that feeling. Probably the majority of you love that feeling. And I think of that old song, you've lost that loving feeling. We often pathologize ourselves. This is probably the top complaint I ever hear from couples, which is, I love them, but I'm not in love with them anymore. A phrase I have come to loathe, by the way, because what does it even mean? But we think we know what it means. And it means your intimacy is high, your thrill and sensuality are low. Back to this mini teaching on sexual desire, sensual desire. I hope this is going to reassure all of you. And now I'm going to draw from a wonderful book called Come As You Are by Emily Nagoski. We'll put that up in the Facebook group for you and a couple other resources. She does a beautiful job of synthesizing the current sexuality research and teaching it in a beautiful, relatable, funny, brilliant way. And that's a great resource to learn more about what I'm about to talk about, which is the research on spontaneous desire. I've just described that, the I want to rip your clothes off right now feeling, and responsive desire. Also drawn from various researchers, Rosemary Bisson, Lori Brado, and others. Responsive desire is, as the word implies, our desire, our horniness, our turn-on factor rises up in response to something. In response to something, like what? Well, it can be as simple as, wow, we haven't had sex in 3 weeks, we probably should. And then you choose to begin. You maybe have a shower. You maybe go to bed nude instead of in your, you know, fuzzy flannel pajamas with little dragons on them or whatever. Oh, did I give too much away just there? And you choose to begin the process of eventually becoming turned on. I suspect, and I won't ask for show of hands, this sounds super familiar to a lot of us. The majority of long-term couples start making love from a place of sexual neutrality for both of them. Let's bust the myth that certain people always want sex and their partners don't. Of course, that's also a common problem, most definitely. But a lot of really happy marriage incorporated long-term couples rarely make love, rarely have sex, including if they have active solo sexual lives. I teach this online intensive couples program with weekly coaching and lessons and all that. And I had the pleasure to get to know some of the couples fairly deeply. I had a couple in my program in February. Beautiful couple. They were about 38 or 40 years old, been together a decade, and they reached out for a private consultation with me because they had not had sex since the week before they got married 7 years ago. And as I unpacked that more deeply, it turned out, and they were not talking to each other about this, it turned out that he had an active masturbation life about twice a week. She had an active masturbation life about twice a week. Through our diving into what was going on and not going on for them, that was the first time they said that to each other. And what was really beautiful, folks, is in that moment, they both lit up because they were thrilled to know their partner still had sensual feelings. They sort of both privately assumed their partner didn't like sex. What's the take-home message there? They were having desire on their own or arousal, enjoying orgasm on their own or arousal, but they had no idea how to bridge the gap and bring it back into relational sexuality. Responsive desire is, I'm not feeling it, but I love you. I might respond and decide let's have sex because I know I always feel better after. How many people here have ever gone to the gym or done any kind of workout? Hands up or in the chat box? Probably almost all of us. Or how many of you people here are doing cold showers? Do you want to go to the gym? Generally for me, no. I don't wake up going, I want to go to the gym. I go to the gym because I know I'll feel great after and I'll be pleased I did. What if, I know it's not romantic, but it's real life. What if you thought of your sexual life that way some of the time? I don't really feel like it. There's no spontaneous desire, but I know if we do, I'm going to feel good. The orgasm is going to be pleasurable. I'm going to feel closer to you. I'll be happy we did. It reminds us we're alive. Whatever your reasons are, you respond to those reasons by choosing to begin the process of becoming sexual. Yes. In the chat box, if you're willing, does anybody resonate with this? Say yes if it sounds familiar in now or a previous relationship, you don't have a lot of spontaneous lust. And when you do, awesome. It's like you got to go to the roller coaster today because you're frick, I'm horny, honey, let's do it. Great. Celebrate the heck out of it. Love it to pieces, but don't rely on spontaneous desire. Most of the couples I work with, that's their one of their main problems. They're waiting to feel, oh, I want you right now, instead of beginning the process that leads to satisfying sexuality. Back to being on stage with this other wonderful sexuality teacher. Hats off to her. She's beautiful. Her name's Jaya. And us laughing, almost falling off our stools on stage when we both said we schedule sex. Aren't you too horny all the time? No, we're human. We're real. We have a relationship. Sometimes we're pissed off at our partner, mad at ourselves, burned out. No, we don't feel horny all the time. So we schedule sex. How about this? whoever's willing, you don't have to say anything and put your hand up. But here's a challenge for those of you in a sexual committed relationship that would like to enrich your sexual life. If your frequency is lower than once a week, that, by the way, is an arbitrary timeline. Having beautiful connected sex once a month is much better than having a ton of sex that isn't working for you. So once a week is simply arbitrary as an example. But if you're not making love once a week and you'd like to be, schedule sex. Monday night's awesome. Wednesday night's awesome. Look at your schedule. We've got a cat running around in the background. She says, hey, how's it going? Schedule a time that works for you. And here's the really tricky bit. The mind will say, ah, Netflix sounds so good, babe. I know it's scheduled lovemaking light, but how about tomorrow? Very much like if you have a lousy workout buddy and you wake up and you're supposed to meet them at the gym and you text and go, I'm not really feeling it. And they go, yeah, me neither. And you go have a freaking Starbucks or whatever instead. Yeah, lousy workout buddy, get a new one, get a better accountability buddy that says, I don't feel like it either, but I'll see you there in 10 minutes. With a sexuality weekly sex date, both of you, because you're typical, remember the research, may not have any spontaneous desire when, you know, Monday night 7:30 rolls around, and you can play with that. You can be, okay, baby, let's go to the gym, right? And then you can start touching, kissing, bring in a sexuality toy to help wake up a tired body and perhaps make it more responsive. Whether or not you have intercourse, not really the point. Whether or not you even have orgasms, not really the point. And I want to acknowledge probably up to 30% of the women watching, because you're women and you're typical, rarely or ever have an orgasm. We can talk about that as well at some point. You're normal. Every physical body is able to have an orgasm, but it's not all that easy for a lot of us. Don't want to assume everybody's orgasmic. Men, prostate issues, functionality issues. I just want to acknowledge real life and not imply we're all sexually intact right now. So that sex date, schedule sex, it gets passion back in the program. It makes passion intentional. How's that for a word you're learning a tremendous breadth and depth about from these two extraordinary, the best in the world leaders you've got here? Setting an intention to nurture the sensuality side of the passion triangle. I've given you only one way, and that may be far too big of a leap for a lot of you right now. Then don't take it yet. Maybe your sensuality gift is, as I've had a few couples choose to do, is to kiss goodnight every night with some tongue. Not a grandma kiss, bit more of a lover kiss, bit more of an erotic kiss. What can you do to bring more eroticism to the sensual side of your passion triangle? I just want to do a quick review, a time check, a couple more teachings I want to bring to you, and then we'll open it up to you. You become the guides. You become the directors of the rest of our session today. The review is the passion triangle. I have not actually defined the word passion yet in terms of what I mean by it. I hope I've defined it through taking you through the three sides. By passion, what a word. Right? Finding your passion, finding your purpose. Look what you're being brought to by Jack, by Patty, to say, can I align my life with my passions? Here, when I talk about passion, it's directly in alignment with that message, but I'm bringing it into a specific of your nine areas, which is the romantic sexual relationship area, now or in the future. Passion being fully alive, fully in ownership. And no, none of us are fully there all the time. I'm not an enlightened Buddha, are you? But we aspire to bring our heart, to be willing to learn, to fall down, get up and begin again. To stop blaming our partner when we're unhappy, even if or particularly when our partner is struggling and maybe they're being extraordinarily difficult, painful. They're in a depression. They're very angry at us. They're completely unwilling to take any ownership for anything. Even then, can we take full ownership for our part in this, including my dear, dear, beautiful people, sometimes making a wise, compassionate, grounded choice to leave a relationship. Notice those words though, wise, compassionate, and grounded. I believe all your experts today, Jack, Patty, and myself, are not on our first marriages, right? I hope that doesn't mean we don't know what the hell we're doing, although I may not have known what I was doing when I married an unemployed Greek actor and thought it would work out, but still, we learned and we left. And then we hopefully learned again. Statistically, folks, though, if you're not doing the kind of teaching we're bringing to you, I have some bad news for you, because the divorce statistics on first marriages, and it's hard to nail these down, research is innately somewhat flawed and doesn't apply to everybody. But the statistics, to be brief, are that second marriages tend to have a higher divorce rate than first. What? Second marriages tend to have a higher divorce rate than than your first marriage, which is a very good indication. If you don't do the work, if you don't go within, if you don't learn the teachable steps and skills to create an exceptional relationship and then maintain them. I'm going to give you a brief exercise on that in a moment. Maintain, because if we're threes, if we're sixes, if we're fours, if we're sevens right now, what can we do to make love more intentional, set goals and accountability and daily touch bases with ourselves? This should sound super, super familiar. You did it when you cleaned out your garages. I saw a photo that frankly humbled me of a before and after shot of one of your garages. Talk about cleaning up your messes and your past. What about the messes in your current relationship? And again, you can apply that to a friendship as well. Please do. What messes do we need to clean up to be intentional? Oh my God, can you tell I care about this topic? I meet very few couples who are in an exceptional relationship. I do not mean a perfect relationship, and none of them are married to their soulmate. None of us are. If you think you married the wrong person, you're completely right. Because we all married the wrong person, love the wrong person, or committed to the wrong person. If we expect that person to make us happy, they're the wrong person. And the next one, and the next one, hence higher divorce rates second time around. What can we do? We can learn these three keys to passions or whatever other plan or teaching fits for you. We can learn the teachable skills. We can continue to renovate ourselves from the inside out so I can bring a better Cheryl to my relationship, so I can bring a more patient, compassionate me, so I can catch myself, call myself on my BS when I blow it, which is all the time. One reason I will never get divorced if it's up to me is if my sweetheart then went on the internet and gave the tell-all book of Behind the Scenes with Dr. Cheryl, my career would be over because I have a real relationship. I mess up, I make mistakes, and I do my damnedest to begin again. I said I wanted to give you a little daily exercise. I think this will dovetail beautifully with some of the practices you're already doing. And it's hopefully a lot less uncomfortable than a cold shower. So I know you're all warriors and you're ready to do this. I teach this as a daily mindful loving aspiration. And it's actually very simple. And I think maybe the easiest way to teach it is I'll give you an example of how my spouse and I practice this. When we do, we try to make a daily practice, which means it's a daily-ish practice. We maybe get 4 days out of seven, and we'll go weeks in a row where we won't be mindful and keyed in enough to do it. And then we begin again. Here's what we do. He's a coffee aficionado. I can't even stand the smell of coffee. If I bite into a chocolate and it's got coffee in it, I spit it out. I'm a tea aficionado. And we each make our beautiful brews in the morning, and we sit in two chairs by the window here on Vancouver Island. And we take maybe 3 minutes, 4 minutes, 5 minutes at most. And we say, hey, babe, so what's your relationship aspiration for today? And we're meaning specifically, you can adapt this for sure. It can be with your team, with your coworker, et cetera. But we mean specifically our relationship aspiration for our romantic relationship. And we pick one thing that is then actionable. So listen here, making the aspiration or the goal or the intention, you can use the language that fits you best, but then setting something that is an action. Give you some examples, ground it in reality. One that I use a lot, and it's one that I put forth yesterday when I put the post in your Facebook group. I said, what's one quality you want to continue to maximize or improve or bring in? I said, the one I work on a lot is patience. Can you imagine why? Aries with Aries rising, red, not the most patient woman by nature. I have to cultivate it. That's why I do things like 3 month silent meditation retreats. I know none of my family can believe I shut up for a day, much less 3 months, but I do fairly regularly. Anyway, in the attempt to cultivate more patience, back to us in our chair. He's got his single origin Ethiopian coffee bean. I've got my first flush Darjeeling tea. Say, babe, what's a relationship aspiration for today? And there's a number of them, but one that I often use because it's such a work in process for me, they say, okay, today I aspire to really focus on and be mindful of using a warm tone of voice when I feel impatient. because you may have gathered today, I have a pretty expressive tonality and a pretty expressive voice. And if I'm annoyed, the voice can very easily, you know, oh, honey, I stepped in rat guts today. You know, there you go. There's a perfect example from a fictional morning that didn't actually happen right here. Yeah, it did, of course. So I often say my intention is if or when I feel impatient, first of all, that's completely me. When I'm impatient, back to the teaching of the Buddha or good mindfulness or good, you know, Jack said something beautiful during your teachings. He says, the story I tell myself and then I feel bad, right? So the story I tell myself about my partner and then I feel bad is, you're a jerk for not checking for rat guts. In that moment, I'm impatient. But why? Because of the rat guts? No. Because of who I'm calling John, not picking them up? No. Because of the cat? No. I'm impatient because of my own mind. My own mind's story and interpretation and reactivity. Back to the morning ritual. I'm going to repeat it and simplify it at the end. Do not worry. I'm sitting with my tea. He's with his coffee. I like to put my feet in his lap so this physical connection grounds us, gets us more out of our head into our heart. And I say, so today my aspiration is I'm going to really work if I feel irritable to change my vocal tone and say, hey, babe, would you mind picking up the rat guts? Faust got another one last night. Simple. Boom. He says, thank you. Then he goes, he says, this is one he used earlier this week, so I don't think he'll mind me borrowing it. He said, my relationship aspiration for today is when I get home tonight, I really want to have a little romantic moment with you. I want to make sure you feel special and connected because I know you've been working really hard. I'm like, thank you. But that's not an action, right? Mine was the aspiration, which is to work on being more patient. The action was to really work on changing the tone in my voice. So my sweetheart, if his was to have a romantic moment, that's a wonderful aspiration, but how do we take it into action? I gave that coaching to a number of you in your comments yesterday, right? You came up with a beautiful quality. And I said, what's one action you could take? So if the quality was, I want to feel more close and connected, some of you then came back because you're brilliant and you're working hard in this beautiful program and said, oh, okay, I want to clear the decks and spend 10 minutes just listening to my partner's day when they get home. Great. That's an action to take the aspiration into something real. So if my sweetheart says, I want to have a romantic moment with you, it might be as simple as, okay, when he takes it to action, when I get home, I'm going to give you a big hug. I'm going to stroke your hair and I'm going to kiss you like I haven't seen you in a month. Great. It might be, I'm going to invite you into the shower and we're going to have a naked shower together. And then who knows what happens, baby? Great. Oh, it's not Monday night. We can't possibly have sex. Kidding. Okay. Let me review real briefly and we can synopsis this for you in the group as well. No problem. I want any of you who are willing, and I hope all of you are, to add to your morning routine with your partner. You can do this online, on the phone, if you're not in the same place, with your future partner, with yourself. What is one relationship aspiration I want to make today? I want to feel happier. Okay. What's an action I can take? I want to feel happier with my mate. I can watch my mind, as they say, stand guard at the doors of your mind. And when I have a negative thought, the negativity bias, oh, for God's sakes, he didn't pick up the rat guts. I can attempt to catch it and look for something positive. That would be an action. I'm explaining this a lot, but we're talking about a 2 or 3 minute. What's your aspiration today, babe? I want to have more fun with you today. Great. What's one action? When I get home, I'm going to jump up and down and make a stupid face. Beautiful. Now to you. It can be very quick. How many of you make aspirations and then forget to do them? I do too sometimes. And you know, one of my buddies said the most idiot simple thing that probably lots of you do and I wasn't doing yet. They tell their phone, they tell Alexa or Siri or whoever, you know, remind me at 2 o'clock to think of my relationship aspiration. Boom, mic drop. You're like, oh yeah, what was it? Dang. And if you tend to forget it, then you can also put in, you know, do something fun and then bring it up. Lot of talking about a simple practice, but I'm going to put forward, it's a bit of a bold statement. If you don't set daily or frequent aspirations for anything that matters to you, and I know this entire beautiful program is inviting you, coaching you, teaching you, and encouraging you to have intentionality, your morning routine, about your fitness, about your finances, please, people, please don't forget about the crystal ball. Don't forget about your love relationship ships, future one. Don't forget to treasure your relationships. Stop taking them for granted, which is what we do when we're a marriage incorporated. We're trundling along. And then what happens? Boom, an affair. Boom, the person leaves us. Boom, they say, I've been unhappy for years. How many marriages, relationships, commitments, and carnage do I stand in the midst of with people who say, I had no idea you were so unhappy. And the other one says, I've been telling you for 3 years. Are we being intentional? Are we simply, whether your partner will participate or not, you can say, I intend today to remember that my partner is a fascinating human. The action I'm going to take is to shut up, write that one down, shut up when they're talking. And as I quipped with one of you in the chat yesterday, there's that old saying, if we were meant to talk more than we hear, we'd have two mouths and only one ear. Can we listen more deeply? Can we honor and remember this person's interesting? One last thing on that. This comes back to thrill. This comes back to what I like to say a lot. Can we fall in love over and over with the one we're already with? Affairs, next relationships, the juice, the excitement, those crazy falling in love thrill feelings we all resonated with are based on novelty. Well, how novel is someone you've been waking up to for 28 years? That depends, because novelty is a state of mind. If someone else meets your partner today, they will find them fascinating because they're bringing a new view, fresh eyes, an interested mind. So I'm going to say something a bit bold that may challenge a few of you here. If you're bored with your spouse, it's entirely your fault. If you are bored with your spouse, it is entirely your fault. Wow, there's a bold statement, because your spouse as a human would be fascinating to someone else. How can we cultivate what I call the mind of novelty? Back to the Buddhist part, to the mind training, to the present moment. I can find you fascinating in this moment if I get the frick out of my way and try to learn who you actually are through the scales and confusions of the last 28 years and who I believe you to be. All right. So the three keys to passion, developing strengths. I say, you know, develop a balanced triangle, but I don't literally mean you need a third, a third, and a third. None of us have enough time to have sex a third of their time, but we can certainly be more touch, more hug, more connection, more just enjoying the beauty of all the senses together. All right. I just want to allude to, you created your visions in, I think it was two coaching calls ago, for these aspects of your life, finances, health, career, purpose in terms of your passion of contributing in the world. Please review, or if you didn't have a chance to do it already, Jack guided you through a beautiful process of creating your relationship vision for the relationship you're currently in, or the one you wish to be in. Because as he so skillfully taught you, so I won't repeat it here, the more specificity we can put into our subconscious mind, it makes a bigger difference for all sorts of seemingly esoteric and very biochemical and psychological reasons as well. All right. Just before we move into a Q&A, as you gather, I could keep talking for a lot longer. And it also looks like I might have to run and get my, I have to plug my computer in. We got a little bit of juice problem here. I want to give you a little challenge right now. This one's going to take about 5 seconds and you don't have to answer or out yourself. How many hours this week, we're on a Wednesday, so from last Wednesday to today, the last 7 days and nights, how many hours did you spend on or within your love relationship, attempting to connect or make it better? And how many hours in the last 7 days did you spend on your business, your livelihood, right? How many hours did you spend on your fitness? I know a number of people who, 3 to 7 hours a week on their fitness, an hour on their relationship. I was teaching at a large event once, and this it was more of a business event, and they brought me in to talk about relationships as a sort of an evening keynote. And someone stood up, and I so admired him. He stood up and he challenged the rest of the room of these high achiever business people. And he said, how many of you have read at least 5 business books this year? And 90% of the hands went up. And he said, how many of you have read at least 5 relationship, romance, sexuality, communication books this year? No hands went up. 4, 3, 2. How many of you have read at least 1 relationship, sexuality, or communication book? Like maybe 30% went, I read one, sort of. And it was so beautiful because it was peer-to-peer. It wasn't coming from me. And he said, if we invest in our love life the way we do our business and relationship, what could happen? And I applaud him for that moment of insight. So just to ourselves, think. And I've been so busy teaching, I haven't been watching the chat box, so I'm just gonna scroll back in it. But I wanna share this beautiful comment from Ivana. I have 15 minutes per day holding my husband's hand on my success tracker daily. Woo, woo, I am so happy. We meet that plus snuggle time, better off than I thought we were. Thank you. That's intentionality. That's goal setting, and that's choosing to follow through. Now, just before, if I have permission, just before we open up for Q&A or comments or things Patty and Jack want to add to what I've shared, I'd love to share with you a story of the couple who inspired me the most to believe that an exceptional relationship, although rare, is possible. And it's not rare to any of us that are willing to do the work. And this is a story of my grandparents, Norman and Evelyn Fraser. They've both left the planet at this time. But I grew up with this extraordinary circumstance where my grandparents, both sets of grandparents, lived close to me here in this small town I'm on in Vancouver Island. Here's Norman's story. Norm, my granddad, was born in Wales to a doctor who was a doctor there in a small Welsh coal mining town. Really poverty stricken and a very high rate of death in the young men, either from the black lung, and we're going back pretty close to 100 years here, or from cave-ins and these very risky coal mining coal mines. So my granddad Norman was not an academic. He wasn't going to follow in his dad's footsteps, who was a physician. And so he lied about his age at 17, and he scammed his way onto a boat bound for Canada. Ends up in the middle of Canada in Winnipeg or somewhere in the middle of winter. I'm a West Coast girl. It's super warm here, like Seattle. I don't do cold winters. So here's my poor granddad in the freezing cold. He got a job for a German farmer in the middle of nowhere for, I think it was $1 a week or $1 a month, whatever it would have been, as a farmhand. He got through the winter, spring comes, and it's time for the annual spring dance and gathering, which you can imagine how well anticipated that is. So his granddad always told the story. He's standing outside, you know, the local hall or wherever this dance is going to be. And he's sort of standing there, as I picture it, with all these, you know, other hunky young bucks kind of leaning against the wall, watching all the beautiful young women, young maidens come in and enter the hall in their, you know, dresses they've been sewing all winter long, their fabric, their ginghams, their this and that. Beautiful girl after beautiful girl. And then he lays eyes on her and he turns to his buddies and he says, "Who is that?" And they say, "Oh, that's Evelyn. But don't even think about it." And my granddad says, "Why not?" And they said, "Because she's engaged to be married." And my granddad famously looked at them and said, "Not for long." And when my granny and granddad would talk about their relationship, granny, who was a very gentle, loving soul, would say, "The only regret I have about falling in love with Norm is I had to let someone else down." Fast forward, beautiful marriage, tough times. Their first child, my father's older brother, died at 2 years old from pneumonia. They had a hard time having the second child and only child that lived, which is my father. Fast forward. I watched this couple as a girl and as a youth, and obviously I don't know all the behind the scenes, but whenever my granddad Norm laid eyes on his Evie, he would light up like a Christmas tree. His eyes would sparkle, his face would soften. He adored my granny. And they were, you know, 50 odd years into their marriage by then. They celebrated their 65th wedding anniversary together. Then fairly abruptly and fairly quickly, over about a week, my grandmother, I would have been in my early 30s at the time, about 20 years ago, she was diagnosed and died very, very quickly from cancer, very quickly. And after she died, we discovered, unbeknownst to any of us, that my granddad had Alzheimer's, but they danced so beautifully as a team. She'd filled in his sentences, covered up, and none of us knew. Now, as you can imagine, with Evie gone, my granddad declined very quickly, the grief, the confusion, and eventually we had to have him in care close by. Luckily, I had returned to this small town for a few years at that time, and I got to spend a lot of time with him. Now, when he would tell the story about laying eyes on Evie, he said she had wavy blonde hair, and she had eyes the color of the sea on a spring day. My granddad was a poet. And when I was in my early 30s, I looked somewhat similar to her. I think you can guess where this story is going. I went to visit him once in the Alzheimer's ward, and he was pretty much beyond comprehension at that point, but he had such a bull of a body and such a strong physiology. His body kept going and going when the mind was not much there. And I walked in and he looked up at me, folks, and he said, "Evie, you're here." And he lit up. like a Christmas tree. And I don't know what divine wisdom, far more than my self-referencing ego, came in at that moment. And instead of saying, no, Granddad, it's me, Cheryl, I said, yes, Norm, I'm here. And he smiled and he glowed and he drifted into a beautiful, beautiful sleep with his Evie. That's when I really realized you can have love and passion and you can light up for a lifetime. You can fall in love over and over with the one you're already with. It's a state of mind. It's a state of grace. It's a state of choosing to love over and over through death do us part, through Alzheimer's and beyond. Is it common? No. Is it possible? Yes. And I hope each of us have some sort of an example of an imperfect couple. Apparently they used to have ragers of arguments when my dad was young and this and that, they were real. But I share that story to hopefully inspire us, especially when we're feeling hopeless and when we're not sure if we're going to stay in the relationship we're in, which is sometimes a wise choice to leave, as we've already said. When we don't believe we can reignite what we've lost, I want to remind you of Norm and Evie, your own Norm and Evies, and I invite each of us to become a Norm and an Evie. They're big shoes for me to fill, and I'm not there yet, but I hope to aspire toward them. So thank you.
That was beautiful, Cheryl. Thank you.
Amazing. Yeah, thank you very much. That was great. Got me thinking.
I'm so glad. I think it's a beautiful legacy for them to leave behind when I have the pleasure to tell that story.
Yeah. It's great. It's so funny because I teach a lot of the same things, and then every once in a while I go, oh yeah, I should be doing that.
Yes. Thank you for saying that. I'm glad I'm not the only expert who needs to be often reminded to practice what she preaches.
Yeah.
Advice, I'm not using it.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. All right.
So that was great. So I would love to know I don't know if anybody put in the chat, but what is their aspiration for, what are they going to come up with? So we talked about giving them a challenge, right, Cheryl?
Yes.
So what's something that everyone's going to commit to doing?
For example, are you going to commit to kiss goodnight erotically? Are you going to commit to at least explore this morning mindful loving aspiration where you sit together if you can? Our schedules can be wonky, and you say something you're going to do. Are you going to commit to read a book, to practice more, to dive more deeply into this sort of teaching? Whatever it is. Thank you. Thank you. Carmen says she had a big aha moment with the crystal balls. Right.
Yeah, we were talking earlier how that should just be a whole book in itself. It's so important. Those are the two things that we really need to be paying attention to. And so often people come to us focused on money.
Yes.
If you have that, you don't really have much of anything. So it was, I can't wait for that book to come out, Cheryl.
Yes, well, okay, I'm on it. I was looking for a new topic for the second book, so there we go. Don't drop the love and sex ball. We'll come up with a better title. So I don't know, Jocelyn, if you've been able to track questions. I can scroll back up. I know I saw some longer chunks come by, and they may have questions in them. I have plenty more I can teach off the cuff, but I want to also respect questions. There was one that came, a couple that came through in the Facebook group. Maybe I'll start with those. And again, if you're willing, put one thing you're willing to commit to, no matter how small. It can be, I commit to rewatching this lesson and picking a thing then. It doesn't have to be huge. But one thing, as Patty just called you to say you're going to commit to around your romantic relationship, your future romantic relationship, or if you choose a friendship, a business relationship, maybe take one that needs a bit of tending. And perhaps I'll start by answering two questions that I pulled this morning from the Facebook group, and then any more that are coming in, if you could cue me to them or read them to me, anyone, that would be great.
I'm going to give you just one that you can write down if you want, because somebody had to leave. Terry Deacon had to leave, and she said, I know I have to go, but I'm going to rewatch the video. And I'd love for you to talk about trust in a relationship.
Yes, I think we were corresponding. Yes, thank you. I'll do that one. But I want to start first with one that charmed the heck out of me that was in the chat today from Anne. She talked about her lovely, wonderful person that she's so in love with, her partner, her husband, I believe, of a long time, and how he's such a great friend and he loves her unconditionally. And she says he's a very busy man with a full career, plus he's volunteer fire chief. And she had this great phrase. She said, "How can I put some fire back into the fire chief?" And she talked about date nights was going to Walmart to get groceries. I'm like, mwah, mwah, mwah. I know a lot of us relate to that. That's not a date night. That's a marriage incorporated thing that's super important and can be fun and connected. But we want a date night to be a little more special. So how can we put some fire back into your fire chief? I want to share with you all the teaching. I love to put it, make your love life a hobby. Make your love life a hobby. What does that mean? Well, think about it right now, and I'm going to ask you in the chat box real quick, what are the qualities that makes something a hobby? What differentiates a hobby from anything else? What are some of those qualities? You can put those in there. It's fun, 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 fun. Whoa, we got a lot of fun-loving people here. It's playtime, not work. You want to do it. It's interesting. You try something new. No deadlines. Yes, that is one of the quickest and better responses to that question I've ever had. Thank you, Patty and Jack, for having such a great group. A hobby, by definition, we don't have to do it. We choose to. And we carve out time for it. My brother-in-law, interestingly, who's a deputy fire chief, very busy guy, loves to golf. So every other weekend he carves out, despite, you know, busy family life, two kids, two teenagers, he and his, my sister have tons to do. He carves out 5 hours to play golf every other weekend when he can. We cherish our hobby. We prioritize it. If there's one word, when we're really honoring our hobby, we make it a priority. So can you apply that thinking to your love life? Because let's be super dead honest here. None of us really want to work on our relationship. We're working on everything else. Good God. We're working on our finances and our this. Blah, blah, blah. We don't want to work on our, oh, I don't want to have that conversation. What if we make a subtle shift in our attitude and our approach to our relationship or relationships, which is, can I make this a hobby and do the things you just immediately shared? Can I approach it with curiosity? Can I treat my love life like it's not something I have to do, but I want to do? Can I make it a priority? Carve out time, make it fun, make it playful. That's simply an attitude adjustment. And I just told you my first untruth. Simply. It's simply an attitude adjustment, but it can have huge consequences. It's a very old example. I'm sure you've heard it, but my dad's a pilot. And if you take off and your course correction's 1 degree off when you take off, by the time you fly across country, you're going to be hundreds of miles or dozens of miles or kilometers away. Simply a course correction can lead to tremendous change. So can you approach your love life like a hobby? How can we fire up the fire chief? Go to Walmart, do your shopping. But then after, depending on where you are and how big of a lockdown you're on COVID right now, can you either go somewhere and sit on a patio and have an appetizer together and smile and talk about one fun thing you'd like to do this month? Can you go to the beach? I live in the country. And so even during lockdown, we're allowed to go outside to the beach. Can you make love more intentional by making love life a hobby? That's more of a big teaching than an actionable step, but make your love life a hobby. Check your mind state. Tell your beautiful fire chief, sweetheart, I love you so much. I am so happy in our relationship, but we're only playing at an 8. We've got all this love, affection, undying commitment. We need a little more fun. We need a little more play. No, we don't have a ton of time. But can we find that hour a week, half hour a week, 5 minutes a day where we play, where we do something and make our love life a hobby? So I wanted to put that out there. Goodness. Great. We've got some. That's terrific. Those of you that want to send me a private question, thank you for doing that. You can just select me and send it only to me. If it's a more private question, I'll get to a couple of those in a moment. Just want to answer two more, one from yesterday and then the trust one also from yesterday in the chat and Facebook. One of you asked me, I apologize, I didn't note your name down. What about sexuality as we're aging? I'm 56. I think a number of us are in that sort of age group, female body, postmenopause, hormonal changes. I won't give an entire teaching on the impact of hormones on sexuality right now, but I'll encourage you to explore that with your physician and an endocrinologist or a sexual health expert. If you're finding real changes, this is men and women, low testosterone can lead to not only erection problems, but also very low desire, also lethargy, fatigue, fatigue, lack of motivation. Always good if you're even over 40 and in a male body to have your doctor check your testosterone on your annual. A lot of doctors, at least in Canada, do not unless you request it. Sexuality after the age of 50 was the question, and I could teach on that for 6 hours, but I'll give you a few minutes on it and hopefully at least provoke you to go learn more about this topic. I'm going to split it down briefly to where we are at psychologically, physically, and relationally when we're in our relationship, say over 50. This applies to any age though. This is not ageist. It's just that's the context of the question. A lot of us find that our sexual life is minimal or non-existent, or the quality of our sexuality has taken a deep dive. I've spoken to a lot of women lately whose orgasms have changed a lot. If the intensity of their orgasmic feeling in the body, the pleasure factor, we can say, used to be like an 8, 9 out of 10, intense, pleasurable. They often find, I hear this from a lot of men too, that the orgasm itself feels more like a 3. It's just more like a buildup, 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 and a small release instead of a wow of a release. And that seems to be, in the physical sense, related to changes in hormones. So that is something that can sometimes be improved by wise, judicious, natural or bioidentical hormone supplementation. I'm not advocating that one way or another. I'm putting it out there as information for people to explore. But I said, physically, psychologically, and relationally. So you and I are older. Our bodies may be changing. Also, we may have gained weight, lost weight. We may be kind of, you know, a bony version of who we used to be, or a chubbier, softer version of who we used to be. Of course, all of you as achievers are attending as much as you can when the time is right to your own physical health. But, you know, this body is not as objectively sexy as it was when I was 25. As my sister used to say, you know, I had the great ass. It did its job. It caught me the man. Now it's a different ass. You know, things change. But can we bring an attitude of grace and beauty to our body psychologically? Physically, there's changes. Orgasmically, body, erection strength, erection stability, all sorts of stuff we can maybe talk about another time. Psychologically, how do we feel as a sexual being? When I was young, I didn't imagine 90-year-olds having sex. But you know, one of my favorite private practice clients came to me a single time about 4 or 5 years ago. He was 82 years old and he called me for a consult, and he came in and he talked about his beloved wife having passed away about 3 years before. And he was dating a lovely woman from the church and he was hoping it was going to get sexual. It probably was. And he was concerned about erection strength because his masturbation erection strength wasn't strong, and he wanted to know what he should do about it. That's a great story because I want all of us at 82 and beyond to think, what can I do about my sexual life to make it joyful and make it connected? Whatever's going on physically, the mind is going to be much more important. If you're attempting to make love when you're older and one of the bodies isn't performing so well, what other erotic activities can you switch to? If an erection isn't firm enough for penetration into the vagina or elsewhere, wherever you enjoy anal sex, oral sex, whatever, all good. Most men can still ejaculate using their hand or a toy or their partner's hand, even with a soft penis. There's all sorts of ways. So if I were going to boil that down, I'd say creativity, letting go of using the way our bodies used to work as a benchmark, and learning the new body, being more in flow, knowing any erotic encounter as we age. And I'm talking, you know, from 50 to, I hope, 100. My grandma was 99, the other grandma. We've got good longevity genes in the family. I hope I get I hope I get 30 or 40 more years of an erotic life. And then relationally, as a couple, who are you as you age? Do you drift further apart? Do you have your separate activities? Are you in marriage incorporated or a bickery kind of bored version of that? How do you cultivate the novelty? So that's a brief overview. Sexuality as we age. The other thing I want to give a shout out, because it's so common and a lot of women and a lot of physicians aren't very aware of this. A lot of women end up with changes in the vaginal wall due to decreasing estrogen, and it becomes much more fragile and therefore more painful upon penetration with a penis, a tongue, a toy, a finger, or whatever. And one of the things you can ask your physician about there, and also some natural things you can ask a naturopath, are vaginal suppositories. There's a very low dose estrogen vaginal suppository. Some women can take once a week, twice a week, very low dose, that helps sort of build and reaffirm and create more vaginal wall health. So that's just a little bit to hopefully give you hope of the amount of interesting approaches we have to the changes in the body, the mind, and the heart as we age, and still, I hope, want to embrace being actively sexual beings, whether that's once a day, once a month, once a week. That joy. I love that Mark's cat keeps going by this drive-by with this nice little tail with a white tip on it. I feel you, brother. One of mine was in the back. She wasn't the rat-killing one, though. He's passed out because he's been hunting all night. All right. Trust. Yes. I'm going to hold the trust one for a moment since she's not live on the call, and I'm going to answer some of the live ones that people are here and then answer hers toward the end because she'll be watching on recording. What do you think of that, Patty?
That's fine. There's one that's come up for several men. Can I just ask you this one? You might have heard.
Oh, please do. Yeah.
So it says, as a single guy, I only spend about an hour a week on relationship, and it's all visualizing my next partner. What can I do differently or add to that?
What a brilliant question. Thank you, those of you who've asked it. First thing is, I'm just going to jump right to it. What's your masturbation life like? What are you doing to become an exceptional lover when you take that into your next partner, him or her? Are you having a typical male masturbation life, which is 0 to 10 real quick? That was fun. We're done. You can learn to become an exceptional lover with staying power and avoid premature ejaculation and avoid delayed ejaculation by playing more with your erotic self. There's a book I would recommend there. Again, we'll make sure you get these. Mantak Chia has a book called The Multi-Orgasmic Man. The Multi-Orgasmic Man. Men can have multiple orgasms. Let's bust that old myth. By not ejaculating, having the orgasm wave, and then not actually coming or ejaculating, and then another orgasm wave and another. Full disclosure, that's not an easy thing to master, but you can. So jumping right to it, I would say, who are you training yourself to be as a lover in bed? Now, much more broadly, listen to classes like this, get some great relationship books. I've mentioned a few, we'll summarize them for you. Learn, you know, more about communication, more about conflict resolution. My goodness, in the program I teach, we've got 2 or 3 weeks of the 8 where we do a lot of really good work on how to communicate more fully, more deeply, avoiding the 4 predictors of divorce in communication or breakup, contempt, criticism, defensiveness, and stonewalling, to quote John Gottman there, who summarizes it better than most. So what are you doing in addition to visualizing your perfect partner, which is great? I ain't gonna get you a great relationship, because when perfect partner shows up, first of all, not perfect, imperfect, beautiful. You know that, I'm teasing. But secondly, who are you bringing to him or her? Who are you bringing to that perfectly imperfect person? We sometimes spend too much time, dare I say, visualizing what we want without making sure we're doing everything we can to become a great lover, a great partner, to be a terrific communicator. If you're heterosexual, reading and learning more, and all of this is broad strokes, of course, each man and woman is unique in their own psychology and way of being, but it can be helpful to do some study around masculine and feminine mental and energetic styles. Whether you're gay or straight or heterosexual, doesn't matter. All of us have some masculine energy and some feminine energy. What can you learn about more about how to express both at the right times, when to be directive, forward, problem solving, when to be in flow, creative, receptive? There's so much you can do, and you're already on your way, because if you've asked, I spend about an hour a week and it's really visualizing what I want, you're making the error all of us, including myself, make, is make sure you visualize who you're going to be. What are you going to bring? How are you going to cherish and light up that person who is lucky enough to meet you when the time is right and to plunge into growth, contribution, and joy with you? How can you cultivate your inner Norman, dare I say, and in your next relationship, light up like a Christmas tree when you see her, even when you're pissed off at her or him, even when you're not sure you want to stay in this relationship? There's something beautiful in them in this present moment if you only look for it. I hope that helps a little bit.
I think that's really, I love what you said about be the person that you want. It's sort of like saying, I want to date this hot body athlete, triathlete, whatever, and I haven't been in the gym in 10 years and I'm completely out of shape, you know?
Yes.
So it's, that's a good way to look at that. And I heard something a couple weeks ago where someone, I think it was Oprah, she said, you know, put whatever it is on your vision board and forget about it. Because if you focus on it too much, then you won't get it, because you're in that fear state that's going to be a low vibration of, I'm never going to meet that person. So I feel like sometimes if we're in that space, we miss that person because they're so worried about missing the person.
Beautiful support, right?
Yeah, that was great. And I really love what you said too about your being mindful of your voice. So all of us that are married, and I, you know, Jack can attest and so can Jocelyn, I can be really intense. So that's my thing. Just so you both know, accountability.
Intense. Yes. When I work with someone on a team, hire an assistant, et cetera, one of the earlier things I say, Patty, is look, if I'm really focused on something and you ask me a question, I have a tendency, if I'm not right on my game, to snap or go, hang on. And I tell them off the top, if I ever do that, please call me on it. I will own it. I will apologize. Please know it's something I'm a work in progress and I'm aware of and I work on, you know, is that, you know, yeah, I'm sort of, yeah, no, not right now. You know, so it's beautiful. We gotta own our shit. Let's be honest.
Yeah.
There's a few questions here that you've sent me privately. Beautiful. Thank you. And some of them I hope I've started to answer. Someone who says, you know, we're good, we cuddle, but very little sexuality. So that's back to that passion triangle. If you haven't already, take the quiz and then use that as a jumping off point to talk about. Please be inspired by the teaching I gave about 20 minutes in or so on this call around the research showing that the majority of long-term couples don't have much spontaneous arousal. That's what most of us think. We're broken. There's something wrong. We're in the wrong relationship. Why we can be tempted by someone else where it is spontaneous and exciting. So you're normal and you fall into the largest category of reasonably happy long-term couples, where you need to, in my view, because you're asking for this advice, so I feel free to give it, really make your sensual side of your triangle a priority. One of the simple things one of the couples in my course did when we were going through this was they went out and bought an erotic board game. I don't know a new one. I can look up some new good ones. Way back, I used to recommend one called Kama Sutra. I don't know if it's even still made, but it's a board game. You know, you shake the dice and you move the little Monopoly dude, and it lands on, you know, caress yourself while your partner watches, or it lands on, you know, slowly do a striptease for each other, or it lands on any level. I'm sure you can get the triple X or the more subtle ones, but I have a friend who by profession is a dog walker and a professional dog and house sitter. And she tells this story that I love to this point. She was touring a house. She's going to be sitting at the house for a week and taking care of two dogs and a cat, I think. And the couple were showing her around and they went into the bedroom and there was a card table set up in the corner of the bedroom. And on it was a sexuality board game. And they said, oh, whatever you do, please don't touch the table or shake the table, because we play one move once a week and our pieces are where they last were left. So once a week they shake the dice and they move the pieces and they do the woot woot the board game tells them to do. How's that for a beautiful way to be intentional around your sexuality? What I love about that story isn't even so much their creativity and playfulness, but that they had no shame or weirdness. They didn't cover it with a sheet. They didn't put it away because the dog sitter's coming. They were like, oh yeah, this is part of what we do. So please don't knock it, because then we won't know where we are in our beautiful fun play game. How authentic and open and spontaneous was that? So those of you more than one who privately send me questions right now about what do we do to spice things up, I would be irresponsible to give you a quick fix, because I'm not aware of one other than an affair, and I don't recommend you do that. So it's really making this a priority and choosing to say, I want to take for the next X amount of time, I hope the rest of your life, but maybe start with a month, 3 or a year, I really want to start refocusing on our sensuality side of our passion triangle. I want to bring more intentionality, playfulness, and exploration to our sexual selves. A very simple one I often offer, depending where you live and how cold or hot it is sleep naked, at least some of the time. It is fundamentally different. I challenge all of you who are going to be sharing your bed with a human tonight. There's maybe pets around. We're all pet lovers here, I think. At least when you go to bed, have a naked snuggle tonight. Even if you're too cold or too hot and need to move apart or put on something, if you tend to get chilled, skin on skin is a profound feeling. It activates your parasympathetic nervous system, which is your calm down system, your connection system. I had the pleasure gosh, about 16 years ago, to witness the only birth I've witnessed of a baby being born. It was my close friend. She had a home birth. Her husband was there. I was there, and her other close female friend and the midwife. And it was their first baby. And when Nora came out of the womb, my friend's husband, Michael, just without thinking, without anything, just intuitively, he tore off his t-shirt and he picked up this infant and he laid her on his chest. That's the beauty of skin on skin, our intuitive knowledge of how soothing and connecting that is. So one way, as silly as it sounds, and maybe we got bumps and cellulites and this and that, who cares? It's dark, you're under the sheets. Snuggle naked more often. Sometimes the simplest things can start to connect us from being talking heads and in this great relationship from here up and forgetting about our whole sensual self.
You know, Cheryl, the last expert we had was a guy by the name of Jim Bunch about environments.
Yes, I watched his lesson.
Yeah, he's great. And so he talks about doing one thing a day that makes you happy, one thing a day that makes you healthy, and one thing a day that makes you wealthy.
Yeah.
I really like how you frame this business, health, and relationship. And really looking at, like, reassessing for all of us, how much time are we in our business? How much time are we in our health? And how much time are we in our relationship?
Yeah.
And if you were to say, what is a really, really healthy ratio?
Of business, health, and relationship?
Mm-hmm. I mean, there's 24 hours in a day, so let's assume we're supposed to sleep 8 hours, which some of us do and some of us don't.
This may sound like a bit of a cop-out answer, but I don't believe it is. I'm going to say be in all of them 100% of the time, because when I'm in business, am I not also in relationship with this article I'm writing, with this person I'm coaching, with this deliverable I'm delivering? What is my relationship with myself in that moment? What's my relationship with my mind's attitude towards this thing I'm doing? With health, again, can I be reaching for a glass of water when I'm immersed in my business instead of a coffee every time? And in relationship, again, we're always in relationships. That's my first answer, is to kind of come from sideways outside the box and say, always be, there we go, Jack's having a drink of water. Well done, my friend, right? Hydrate, hydrate, hydrate. Another way to put it is, if I'm going to be super honest, and if I got to be boss of the universe, I'm not yet, unfortunately. Every day, invest an hour in your love relationship, whether that's, talking about the day in a way that's really lovely, but ending it with a ritual where you have a 3-breath hug, simply breathing in and out together. At least an hour a day. And that doesn't have to be working on it or even playing with the hobby of your love affair, but really connecting without distraction. Oh my good Lord, people, if your phone pings when you're with your sweetheart, throw it in the ocean. Get rid of it. Get out of the room. Here's a bit of data. I think it's important for all of us to hear. You all, some of you may be familiar with it. There was a great study where they brought people into a lab. You know, as psychologists, we love to do lab stuff. And people had their smartphone with them. And in the first group, double-blind control study for the scientists in the room, in the first group, the phone was turned off so there'd be no buzzer, binger alerts, and it was upside down next to them. So they wouldn't see the screen light up and they wouldn't hear anything. And they were given a cognitive task, you know, counting backward from 100 by threes, that kind of thing, an attention, concentration, memory task. The second group, the phone was left in the waiting room in their purse or their bag or their pocket, out of the room. Startling difference in the performance between whether your phone was in the room disabled versus out of the room. And the people where the phone was in the room but disabled had a far poorer performance on memory, attention, and concentration. So do not tell me if your phone pings, which is way more intrusive than it being there and turned off, does not affect your attention. It 100% does. Don't take my word for it. Take science. So get the phone out of it, that hour a day, whether it's 1 hour or 320 minutes is, please be present as much as possible. If you cannot be present right then, own it. Say, babe, I'm super distracted about this deadline. I so want to show up with you. Can we do it in 45 minutes? I got to go clear my head of this. Yeah. And then you know what? How about you have a long hot shower together and then move into connecting? So couple of different responses to that, Patty. And I think forgive ourselves, be kind to ourselves. We are works in progress. No, I don't spend an hour on my relationship every single day. Please don't be beating yourself up if you're thinking, we got to do better. We got to do better. Remember a hobby. You might not play golf for a few weeks, maybe even for a whole season. That doesn't mean you don't cherish it and it's not important to you and you want to inhabit it more and bring it back in to your day-to-day being or month-to-month being. I hope that helps.
That's a good answer. I think it's good for everyone to kind of have some sort of reference point so they're not in their own heads comparing.
Yeah, yeah. So there are tons of questions here, but I know we're a little bit, excuse me, I just got to plug in the pewter. I know we're getting close to end of time. I want to answer the trust question because she's been really, really awesome about participating. I don't know if there's a way to save this chat function, Jocelyn. If so, if you could save it, I can go back and look at these and we can do a follow-up or something because there's a lot of fantastic questions coming to me privately. Husband won't sleep in the same bed because I snore. Boy, I hear that a lot. Go to a sleep specialist. Look into, do you have sleep apnea? Look into snoring techniques. And at the very least, go to bed together, snuggle, connect, have an evening ritual, even if you then have to separate to two different beds. And here's a radical idea. So few of my couples that need to sleep apart, sometimes because of shift schedules. I work with a lot of police officers who work overnight, et cetera. Is go to bed together whenever possible, even if one of you is going to stay up and snuggle, say goodnight, kiss goodnight, be together. The one who's going to be on a different schedule can then leave. The other one doesn't have to be asleep, but you've ended your day with an intimate ritual. Snoring, whatever, you're in different rooms. I don't like people to be in different rooms all the time if they can begin to solve it. Earplugs for the one listening, snoring techniques for the one snoring. But in the morning, if you wake up in different beds for whatever set of reasons, whoever wakes up first, unless it's going to disrupt your partner's sleep, but when it's appropriate, go in and snuggle. Good morning. Take them a cup of tea. Take them a cup of hot chocolate made with coconut milk, whatever it is. I can't tell you how few people think of this when they talk to me about, well, we sleep apart. We don't go to bed at the same time. I'm like, you can always go to bed at the same time. They go, no, we can't. I'm a night owl and she's a lark. I said, you can go to bed at the same time. When your early riser goes to bed, go to bed with them. Spend 5 minutes, 10 minutes, then get up. And it's like I'm the smartest freaking person in the world. They've never thought of it. It seems a little self-evident when we hear it. We can't see the back of our own heads, right? So sometimes it's really helpful to have someone that does. And a lot more painful questions of difficult relationship stuff you're sending to me privately. I'll try to get to them in some other way. Trust, here we go. This will be a beautiful way to bring it to a close because we had your other listeners question about trust. And here's another one I'll read anonymously that's come in. What if one of you in your previous relationship cheated and the other one struggles to trust, even though the cheating was in the last relationship? There's an encapsulation of the multiple different stories in the Naked City, so to speak, around trust. Big teaching. I'll try to give some, I hope, useful gems in a brief answer. Trust is a gigantic word, and psychologically, I suspect Jack and Patty and some of you will be familiar with what I'm about to say, but psychologically, infants and toddlers grow up with a certain type of attachment style, which is some of us grow up feeling very what's called securely attached when we're children. We feel safe. If our parent needs to go away overnight, we don't have tremendous anxiety. We feel kind of contained. Others have what's called insecure attachment, and this can be for a number of reasons. It can be as simple as when you were two, your parents had another baby and they were very involved with that baby. They were fantastically loving to you, but you felt displaced. We won't go into a whole teaching of attachment theory right now. Then we grow up, allegedly anyway, and we carry the template of our early attachment into our romantic relationships. It's hard to shift your early attachment style. It is possible. It takes a fair bit of courage and work. Another term that may be familiar to folks related to this is abandonment fears. You've got a kid in you that when your partner says, hey, babe, I had the greatest business lunch today. There was two new hires. Let's say your partner's male and heterosexual. There were two new hires there, you know, Janet and Juanita, and they were such great women. I really enjoyed them. If you have abandonment fears, you got a chill of ice in your heart when you heard that. Even though you know it's not rational to be threatened by other women that he's met, that he says, oh, I just enjoyed them. They were great. You'd really enjoy them, hon. We should have them over for a barbecue. Abandonment fear, deep imprinting, habitual fear in the psyche. So there's a little bit of mini teaching you can explore further. There's some books. I'll source a good book or two for you folks that want to learn more about adult attachment and how it plays out in your romantic sexual relationships. But let's ground it in reality from the various ones of you that are struggling to trust. I've kind of laid the groundwork there by saying, ultimately, To trust you is a vulnerable act that has no guarantee. If I place my trust in you, that you, Jack, are my partner, and I trust you're never, ever, ever going to betray me in word, thought, or deed, that's a very vulnerable, risky, and arguably unintelligent thing for me to do. To say my trust is based on Jack's behavior. All of my safety's in his hands. Oh, I already feel a bit anxious saying that out loud because there's no safety in placing my trust entirely in his hands. For one thing, he might get hit by lightning tonight and be dead. And then what? Blessings, that does not happen, Jack. Just whew, cleanse the room. Trust, ultimately, this is a challenging teaching. I want you to take it gently, gently. Trust ultimately is a personal act. I ultimately need to learn to trust you and trust that if betrayal happens, you die, you get cancer, you do deliberately or semi-mindlessly end up betraying our trust in a sexual, romantic, or financial way. I trust I will be okay. I trust, like the analogy of the flexible willow tree versus the mighty oak, the wind blows of change and the oak's more likely to fall than the flexible one. How can we trust? By doing some work, sometimes with a skilled psychotherapist or someone of that nature, or doing work together with your partner is actually my preference, where you do that skilled deep work with your partner in the room to start to learn what your terrified self, the older part, the younger, old, chronologically younger in age part of you is saying, oh my God, keep me safe, please keep me safe, please keep me safe. And when he or she is screaming with anxiety, the flood of anxiety, the second your sweetheart says, oh, there was someone really cool at the meeting, and you're like, I'm not safe, they're gonna cheat. Logically, you often know that's not going to happen, but the scared part of you is trying to keep you safe. So can we learn to recognize that when it's up, usually in a microsecond of anxiety? Can we learn to, I keep doing this, because can we learn to soothe the frightened part of ourselves that is terrified to trust? Because a kid that is abandoned will die. A 3 or 4 or 5 or 8 year old left in the woods and abandoned will die. If you and I were left in the woods and abandoned, we'd find our way out. We might be a bit battered and tattered and hungry, but we'd find our way out. So a lot of it, so many couples are trying to make their partner trustworthy, and knowing even if you've got the most honest, integrity-laden person who will never, I repeat, never betray your trust, you're never going to trust them fully unless you do some of that deeper inner work on your attachment, on your fears. And it needs to come from profound self-compassion. Profound, not, I hate that I'm so insecure. Oh my goodness, would you scream that at a 5-year-old who is aching and screaming for your love? No, of course you wouldn't. You'd gather him or her up and soothe them. You'd stroke their hair. You'd hold them on your bare chest so their parasympathetic nervous system could activate and they could calm down. This is a little too dicey to jump into right away in some couples, but I like to get couples to where if I'm being triggered into my abandonment, my fear, my lack of trust, then I will often lash out with words or deeds. I hate you, F you, you're a jerk, you're out of here. I like to get couples to where the one who's not triggered can actually say, babe, I'm going to hold you. Is that okay? And embrace their frothingly frightened, abandonment obsessed in the pits of despair and help soothe the physiology so you can come out of being what's called flooded or diffuse physiological arousal, basically irrational because of anxiety, fear, or grief, and be regrounded. We've all been there to some degree, whether you're blessedly the people without abandonment issues, about 1/3, about 30% of men and women across the boards, any gender orientation, sexuality, do struggle with abandonment fears. About 1/3. I'm one of them. It's something I've had to work on in terms of being terrified that I'd be cheated on. I come from a history where that was in the family to some degree and left an imprint on me as a kid. So first of all, kindness. Try not to judge yourself harshly when you're triggered and you do and say things that you are not proud of. It's not okay, but it's understandable. And the work is learning to kind of rein that in, self-soothe, and then turn to your sweetheart and say, babe, I'm super triggered right now. I need to feel safe. Can you help? Absolutely. Let me hold you. Let me reassure you. That's a broad work and often best done with a professional who can guide you through it or you and your sweetheart through it. But again, to reiterate, please don't beat yourself up for not trusting when you know it's not necessarily logical. That's okay. It's okay. It's like PTSD. I mentioned I work with a lot of cops, people post car accident. I had a car accident. It could have been fatal. Luckily it wasn't, but I got really shaky driving around that same corner for years. And logically I knew I was safe as I drove around the same corner. I knew the conditions were fine. The car was safe. There wasn't black ice, which led to the original accident. But logic doesn't work when the body's in trauma. But we can utilize logic to remind ourselves, this is old, this is not happening right now, and I'm gonna, you know, soothe the scared me that's frightened in this car right now. I'm gonna soothe the scared me that's frightened that I'm not safe in this relationship right now. So a small teaching on probably one of the most important relationship questions we can ask, which is, how do I learn to recover from my past patterns, traumas, histories, learned habits, stupid ideas I thought made sense, stuff I was taught. And today, you know, August 2020, how can I choose now who to be? And how can I support myself with this sort of teaching, this sort of community, this sort of growth, this sort of ongoing study to consistently or semi-consistently be reminded of what matters? Daily aspirations for your relationship, cold showers, lemon water, reviewing your list of success principles, the things that help keep us on track when invariably, this being included, we fall off the track. But I'm reasonably good at getting up and dusting myself off, holding myself accountable with love. I don't do a lot of, oh, Cheryl, you screwed up. I do, wow, Cheryl, that was not cool. How can you do better?
That's good. I love it. This was great. Everyone's saying it's fascinating. They have so many insights. Thank you so much. This was more than I expected. Thank you for showing up for us and being available. I know you're busy.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. I look forward to supporting in other ways. And there are ways for folks to get, I send out free videos with a little, what I call a love bite each week, a little reminder, a way to help keep us accountable, a little tool. I'd love to welcome any of you into my community on an ongoing basis. I feel like we're beginning to be friends already.
That's great. I know Jocelyn will post all that as well.
Yep.
In the group, so people can refer back. So if you're watching this and you are live or you are watching the recording, there will be resources that Dr. Cheryl has in different ways. So thanks again. It's great.
Well, you're very welcome. I want to thank you for trusting me to share me with your community. I think there is no greater gift that persons like yourself can do, which is to trust someone you didn't yet know very well. And to trust that I would bring, I hope, useful and heart-based information to your people. I it's very humbling, and I thank you for that.
Well, on a scale of 1 to 10, you showed up as a 20, so we really appreciate it. You did great.
Can you email my husband and tell him that?
Sure, give me his email address. I'll be glad to.
I actually think he's going to want to hear that if he's anything like my husband. It's like, yeah, I know they think you're awesome, but sure.
It's true.
At home before one story at a time.
He's a wonderful cheerleader. Yes, he's just a bit forgetful about rat guts, but he's human.
I was gonna mention that the private chat won't get saved on our end. So if you have a specific question that didn't get answered, you can email it to me, and I'll make sure it gets over to Dr. Cheryl.
Great.
And I know that we talked about, prior to this call, maybe doing like a little mini challenge, because everyone in our community loves challenges. That's so great. We might throw together like a little couple day mini challenge that will start before our next challenge for the people who are interested in it.
It's gonna be like bring your significant other to work day. Because mine don't know what mine looks like. No, I love that idea. And also, if you are watching or you have a private question and you don't want to even give it to Jocelyn, you could just share that you would like to speak with Cheryl, and Jocelyn can pass that along.
Yeah. So, yeah. You can email me directly as well, if you like, through my website, which is drcherylfraser.com, and just click under contacts and send me a direct email as well. That's fine.
She responds really well because she responded to me about this.
I know. It was so great. Like in the stars, it was all perfect.
Yeah.
Thank you. So if I could offer one last reminder, it is possible in your current relationship, your future one, or in your relationship with yourself to fall in love over and over with the one you're already with. So please take that in, and may we all do a great job in time of manifesting that.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Thank you so much, Cheryl.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Have a great day, everybody. We'll see you next week, right? Next week?
Yeah. Office hours are manana.
Oh, tomorrow. All right. I might have to call Cheryl afterwards. There might be more questions. Okay.
Happy to.
10 right. o'clock a.m. tomorrow.
All right, everyone. Take care. Have a great
day.
Bye.